Welcome to The Future of Journalism, a podcast from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism. I'm Mitali Mukherjee, Acting Director and Director of Journalist Programs at the Institute. And joining us today are Wakasa Jars, a postdoctoral researcher at the Institute, and our former director, Rasmus Nielsen, who is now a professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Copenhagen. Of course, Rasmus continues to work with us on a lot of the research that we do around audiences, news, trust, and many other aspects. Thank you, Vakas and Rasmus, for joining today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So the reason we've gathered for this conversation is because Vakas and Rasmus have co-authored a report alongside Richard Fletcher and Shannon McGregor that looks at how people around the world use platforms for news and information about politics, the value they see in them, and the concerns that they have. It's based on a survey that was fielded in October this year across 8 countries that we see as a range of high-income democracies, including Argentina, Brazil, Germany, Japan, South Korea, Spain, the UK, and the USA. The report is available on our website now, and it's been published with the generous support of the Knight Foundation. In this episode, we're going to dive into some of the findings that shed light on how platforms influence media ecosystems around the world. So let's get started. Vakas, first question to you, where we'll really try and set a bit of context around the report that you've worked on. The report explores how people in 8 countries, as I said, use platforms for news and information about politics and what sort of perceived value there is or concerns there are around that. So let's start first with an outline of what proportion of people actually use different types of platform for political news as we define it.
Yeah, it was fascinating to work with different people across these countries in different contexts. And the very basic thing that we could have asked, given our focus on journalism and news, was how do they consume news and political information across different platforms. Regarding the proportion across 8 countries, search engines are the most widely used platform for news. 45% people have said that they use search engines for news and political information, which was followed by social media. 41% people said the same. And video networks, which included platforms like YouTube, Dailymotion, and etc., 30% people said that they use such networks. On the other side of the spectrum was messaging app and generative AI. 15% people said they consume political information or news from these platforms, from messaging apps. And for generative AI, 7% people said the same. When we look on the other side, which was not so a digital platform, sort of traditional mainstream media sources such as TV, we see completely different picture because TV comes on the top, as most of the time it happens. It's still very much relevant. What we have is the online news website to begin with. 59% people actually, as a set, but as they consume political news and information on these online websites, whereas 57% people said that they consume political information on TV. Now, it's important to sort of mention that the online news website is the aggregate, what we think that are multiple platforms being used, which are just the online presence of the mainstream media outlets. Whereas the TV, it comes up as a single source, which basically means it could be that they are using multiple different brands and channels on the TV. But when we talk about an individual platform type, we have these higher percentages of people who look through the political news information on online news websites and TV compared to the other digital platforms I just mentioned. Yeah, and regarding the last bit about you ask, how does the report tell us who is using platform for news information about politics and if there are any clearest divide lines? Well, the use of news outlets and the use of digital platforms to get news information, what we have seen is not a question of either or. It's a kind of very intertwined. people use multiple platforms at the same time. Only a small minority of around 10% people or less rely exclusively on platforms, which by that we mean they exclusively look on news information on platforms, and they're not looking on, let's say, on both types of mediums. So that's how that's a very small minority. But as I mentioned earlier, we have a very diverse mix of people's preference when it comes to consumption of news and political information.
That's really interesting, Lukas. And it is an iteration of work we've done in the past, where this time we've been much more granular about the kind of platforms that we're talking about. Rasmus, one of our key standing explorations, if you will, is at the Reuters Institute, is around how much people trust the sources of news that they consume. In this study, how much trust do people say they have in platforms? And do you see any sort of really sharp variance according to either demographics or country or gender or political leaning?
Yeah, there was a lot of really, I think, important and rich data here on public opinion, on the trust in different platforms. But before laying out some of those findings, I think it's important to remind ourselves why we care about trust. So we care about trust in different sources, news and information, not because trust is the same as trustworthiness. People can trust institutions that are untrustworthy, or they can distrust ones that are trustworthy, but because trust is a social fact. We can investigate who people trust and how much they trust these different institutions, and that's important in itself, the same way that it's important to understand whether the public is aware of the scientific consensus or disagree with it, separately from what the scientific consensus might be on an area. It's also important because we and other researchers have shown that trust is an important mediating variable in terms of how much people rely on information they see from different sources. I think this makes a lot of sense intuitively. You're more likely to form your views or act on the base of information that you see from sources or via channels that you trust than from those who don't. And in that sense, in addition to being important to understand who people rely on for information, as Vikas just outlined, it's important to understand their perception of these different platforms or sources. And here, the report, I think, really adds important texture to our understanding of it. It's a forceful reminder that even though people use digital platforms quite intensely, also sources of news and information, generally most people are quite skeptical of the content that they see there. Just over a third of our respondents across the countries that we cover say they trust the news and information they see on video networks. Slightly fewer say they trust what they see on messaging apps, and even fewer on social media and via generative AI. Search engines really are the only type of platforms that's an outlier here. They are named as trusted by a slight majority of our respondents, 55%. So quite a gap between search engines and other kinds of platforms. But more broadly, I think this is in line with what we found in the past, that people rely quite a lot on these different platforms, but with the partial exception of search engines, they're quite skeptical of information that they see. Now, in one sense, this might be a bit surprising. Why do people rely on platforms for information when they don't trust the stuff they see or the platforms that serve as the material? But in the sense, we shouldn't really be surprised by this. This has long been the case that in sort of pre-digital media environment, that some of the most widely used media, tabloid newspapers, were rarely trusted even by their own readers. And I think that's the case today for many platforms, and people can use something for entertainment purposes, for connectivity, for whiling away time, or just getting a sense, an ambient sense of what's going on in the world without actually regarding it as a reliable or trustworthy way to access information. But some platforms do stand out, search engines, just as some individual news media stand out, even against a backdrop of often low trust in news.
Vikas, let's scratch that point about the benefits of these platforms, or the perceived benefits of these platforms. And I think one of the big takeaways from the report is how you and other authors have circled around the idea of platform ambivalence. What do people say are the perceived benefits or even the drawbacks of using various types of platforms? And does that relate specifically to news consumption on the same platforms?
Yeah, I was very curious about understanding how people actually see the benefits of different platforms. And there has been a lot of discussion around the negative, perceived negative evidences or correlational studies that talk about that platforms are basically very harmful and people use it for the detrimental, has a detrimental effect on both them, on them personally and society as well. So we really wanted to dig deeper into these. And when we want to do that, and we kind of disaggregate different platforms and different issues. And when we specifically ask about the positive aspects, what we found was that on average across all countries, we see the clear majority seeing that platforms have made it easier to connect with family and friends. 66% people said that. They also mentioned that it has made it very easy. These just digital platforms have made it very easy for them to find information that they need, and also to widen their social network, for example. But having said that, they were very much aware of the problems, and that's what we are referring as a platform ambivalence, which by that we mean that people use these platforms for news information about politics and other issues, while also remaining skeptical of the information that they see there and concerned about issues regarding misinformation and fake content. And there is a widespread recognition of such concern. We have more than half think that platforms have made it easier for people to say things they would not say in person, for example. And then 69% people believe that they are very much concerned about the spread of misinformation online and harassment how people can easily threaten other people. 66% people said this. And 64% people actually said that how digital media have or platforms have made it sort of easier that to spread extreme viewpoints. So, you know, in a way, it kind of reflects that people are not that gullible because they can understand that there are benefits of using those digital platforms, regardless which platform we're talking. One is better than the other, for example, as Rasmus has mentioned. But they are also very, very much aware of the fact that what are the key issues that they should be, you know, keeping an lookout for. And they're not taking this for granted. And I'm kind of, in a way, I'm happy that they are ambivalent. We don't see a clear division, that they see just the positives, not the negatives. So that was also very important takeaway for us.
Rasmus, this is a timely conversation, particularly given the election year that we are going to put behind us in 2024. Let's talk a little bit about this perception of bias across platforms. It feels quite clear that platforms are undoubtedly a well-used source of political news, but do users feel that the platforms are neutral spaces for political news, or is there a very clear and perceived political bias when it comes to one platform versus the other?
Yeah, I couldn't possibly comment on whether I would love to have data at the brand level of individual social platforms that have changed ownership recently. But we limited ourselves to asking at the levels of a broad category of social, video, generative AI, search engines, and messaging applications. And the question that we asked the respondents is whether on balance they feel that each of these different kinds of platforms are systematically biased towards a certain political view or not. And I think the first thing to recognize is that in contrast to a lot of other questions that we ask in surveys, we have really high numbers of people answering don't know. People often will volunteer an opinion on things, but in this case, we have significant numbers of people in most countries, between a fifth and a third of our respondents who just say they don't really have a view on this. And I think this is quite intuitive in a sense that it's very difficult for citizens, even for researchers, to get a real overview and a real grounded view of what content platforms actually surface. This parenthetically, of course, raised some questions around transparency and why it's important that we can really assess the institutions, our society. But we also have a number of respondents who do have a view on this matter. And I think there are two things to highlight here. The first one is that social media are particularly likely to be seen as systematically biased. Across the countries that we cover, nearly half of our respondents, 47%, believe that social media are systematically biased. Note here that this does not in itself tell us in what directions. Right. I mean, there are multiple grievances expressed against social media platforms. Some people see them as inherently liberal. Some people see them as inherently conservative. But at least we have data here that a large number of people believe that social media platforms are politically biased, nearly half of our respondents. The figures for the other platforms are lower, about a third, and they match up very evenly with the number of people who say they don't feel that these platforms are systematically biased. So for most of the other platforms, in fact, there is a slight plurality of responses. They don't really think search engines or generative AI or messaging applications are politically biased. Now, it's important, I think, here to stress that this is an area where, in contrast to some of the other things that we look at in the report and have survey data on, there is a lot of country variation. So just think of a couple of specific examples. In, for example, Brazil and the United States, there is a preponderance of respondents who believe that social media platforms are politically biased. Whereas in countries such as Japan and Germany, that really isn't the case. They're seen much the same way as other platforms, and we don't have the same level of public concern about a possibility of political bias. And I think this is important because even though I think most of us, whether as researchers or citizens, might sort of struggle really to form a solid view on this ourselves, there are, of course, countries where the possibility of political bias from one or more platform companies are really central themes in political discourse, and where you have very prominent political actors accusing platform companies, sometimes collectively, sometimes individually, of political bias. And I would say that our data suggests that over time, such elite accusations, sometimes illustrated, sometimes more unsubstantiated, will over time form people's views. If they keep hearing from politicians that they have sympathy for or may even vote for, that this or that or the other company is biased, then over time, perhaps their views will be influenced by that. And again, we shouldn't be surprised by this. The news media will be intimately familiar with this dynamic. Many news media would argue that they are independent, even impartial. But we've seen in recent decades a growing number of politicians who will relentlessly accuse the media of bias against them. And over time, at least the supporters of those politicians will become receptive to that line of argumentation. And some of them will begin to see the entity in question, whether platforms or publishers, as biased.
Vikas, the study stacks platforms against each other, but it also looks at other actors, journalists, news media, politicians, as Rasmus was referring to. And it is clear that these platforms play a large role in our lives, but so do other institutions and figures, particularly when we're talking about accessing news and information. What did you find in your report when you looked at how these platforms measure up against other such actors? And were there specific angles you were looking at?
Yeah. Well, one thing that, again, kind of drove us in this direction was just to pitch platforms against other individuals or institutions, but kind of see where do this fit in the larger scheme of things. And we wanted to see if actually people think that these digital platforms, when put against other institutions and individuals, do they bring us together as a society or do they sort of segregate us? And in that view, we kind of ask people on a balance, if you think that each of these institutions and platforms bring us together or divide us. So what we did was we subtracted the positive from the negative and we got a net score. And the findings were, let's just say, a little unexpected, at least for me, because we found that messaging app and search engine are platforms that people think on balance bring us together. In contrast, respondents think that social media divides us, which kind of makes sense to some extent, but there are variations across different countries. But when compared these platforms with other actors in society, many more people actually thought that journalists and news media, and especially politicians, divide us than this, they say the same about any other platform we ask about. So with journalists, for example, the rank, the score that journalists receive was minus 29, the news media was minus 27, and the politicians ranked on the top, which did the score of minus 55. And we see this across all countries except for Germany, where social media is seen as more divisive than news media. But even here, people still see that the news media as something that divides the society. There's quite a charge or, let's say, strong views people hold towards news media in particular, but not just the news media, but here we can kind of make a distinction that how different platforms, when we disintegrate them, disaggregate them, how we see that which one is ranked in which one is regarded in a certain way among people that we cover in different countries.
Rasmus, let's talk a little bit about the regulation aspect of this as well. A part of the report looks at the type of regulation users feel is necessary to address certain issues occurring on those platforms. And again, it feels like an extremely important conversation, just given all the news flow around AI at this point in time. What areas do platform users think are the most important to address, and where do they see that balance really between platform regulation, which is regulation of self, or governmental regulation?
Well, I think this is a section where a lot of the different themes of the report really begin to come together, right? So we've documented this, what we describe, as Vikash said, as platform ambivalence, where most of the public have pretty significant concerns, widely held by much of the public, about issues around misinformation, around harassment, about the spread of extremist viewpoints, and a number of other issues, even as people also really value platforms for making it easier to connect to people, find information, find like-minded people. And broadly, with the exception of social media, generally we see large numbers of respondents seeing platforms as a net benefit, both for them individually and for society at large. But we really have this ambivalent relationship where there is a recognition of the positives, but also very significant concerns about very serious issues. Now, when we ask people about whether they feel that policymakers are paying enough attention to some of these issues, misinformation, the misuse of generative AI, or wider issues such as tech companies' handling of personal data or their market power, we have large numbers of people, about a third in most countries, who say they feel that policymakers are paying too little attention to these issues. So there is a significant part of the public who believe that authorities and elected officials really ought to be more on the ball on these issues and aren't there to safeguard the public interest. Now, I think the thing that sort of complicates how this plays out in public opinion is that the people who have the least confidence in politics in their country are also more likely to be concerned about a lot of these issues, right? So we find that significantly higher numbers of those who say they distrust politics in their country feel that issues such as misinformation or the misuse of generative AI are being overlooked by policymakers, whereas those who have greater degree of confidence in politics are less likely to say these issues are getting too little attention. Why does it matter? It matters because you have more concern about a relative lack of policy attention from parts of the public who don't really trust policymakers. So this, I think, is important to keep in mind in interpreting some of the findings we have in the report, where we ask people very directly who on balance they think should overall lead on setting content policies and guidances for platforms, the companies themselves or national governments. So we try to sort of draw people out and encourage them to take a clear position in this. And here we generally find that despite the fact that people have many misgivings about these companies and their role in our society, in most cases, with the exception of generative AI, they tend to prefer that the companies themselves set the rules. And my own interpretation of this is this is in part because they may not trust the companies very much, but they don't trust policymakers very much either. And in that sense, they may not be that keen on seeing the government and the state barge in an area that is quite problematic as it is, but from the point of view of some citizens might become even worse if political actors that they don't have much confidence in get directly involved. So ours are the top line, and this is very much aligned with what the Knight Foundation showed a couple of years ago in the sort of precursors of this report focused on the United States alone, is that it's clear that much of the public want more aggressive scrutiny of the role of for-profit platform companies in public life. But it's also important to recognize that at least at this stage, a demand for more policy attention and more scrutiny is not always the same as a demand for a greater role for active direct government intervention, because people don't necessarily trust their governments or their elected officials.
Well, Vikas, there's clearly a gradient as well that emerges in terms of how people view the overall impact of some of these platforms. From the study that you've conducted, which type of platforms sort of emerged as the most favorable and which were the most detrimental? And I suppose I'd add a layer to that, which is, did you see a difference between how people perceive this on a personal level versus a societal level?
Yeah, I mean, we have been talking about platform ambivalence, which is we don't see a clear picture. So with that in mind, we kind of, I think if I would say that we have a sort of a clear picture on this specific issue, then it would not be wrong, because generally large number of respondents that we have interviewed, they judge platforms have a net positive impact both for them personally and as a society as a whole. When we disaggregate this on different platforms, this seems like this is particularly true for search engines, and to a lesser extent to, let's say, video networks. And when we further look across different countries, we see that people in Germany, the UK, US, and South Korea think that social media has a net negative effect on the society, while often thinking it has a net positive effect on them personally. Germany here is an exception, because people see that social media has not just a detrimental impact on the society, but on them personally as well. And they also have a similar negative evaluation towards the generative AI on the society. So in a way, if we look at the sort of a broader picture, we see that people do recognize that the platforms have made things easier for them in a lot of different ways. And they see that there is a net benefit for them, at least, as well as if we look at the different, across different countries for social media, if we take that bit out for the other platforms, people are generally positive toward other platforms with a bit of mixed opinion toward social media in particular. Regarding the individual aspect, for example, here we looked the same question, and we sort of wanted to look into how different demographics kind of reveal different distinct patterns. And age, for example, emerged as something of very important factor here, because what we see that younger groups generally express more favorable opinion toward all platforms, social media, search engine, again, being on the top. However, as the age increases, positive perception of for platforms generally declined, and it goes for all platforms except search engine, where search engines, however, maintain a positive rating across all age groups. We do not see a lot of differences when it comes to differences between men and women, except for video networks. For all the other platforms, people have both genders have similar opinion, which is basically net positive benefit. Regarding the pretty much the similar kind of divides we see on the political spectrum as well, where search engine seems to be highly regarded as has a net positive benefit across political spectrum, whereas the other platforms, there's not a clear political divide, so to speak, when it comes to people's evaluation towards these platforms being favorable to the society.
Rasmus is clearly a project that's looking at a very influential and rapidly evolving area of our lives. I mean, search engines we've been using for a long time now, but there's more coming into the mix, including AI and Gen AI. And it's also clear that there are sharp concerns around issues like misinformation, around data privacy. What would you say is the main takeaway for policymakers, for news industry from this report's findings?
I would highlight maybe three. I think the first one is to recognize that while sort of pundits and politicians sometimes might like to sort of talk very much about sort of us and them, brave elected officials holding big tech to account, or upstanding independent news media challenging Silicon Valley. From the point of view of much of the public, these things are really intertwined, and people mix and match these things. They rely on platforms in part as a way to access news and political information. And from the point of view of much of the public, these things are more intertwined than they really are separate. I think the second point then is that it's very clear that there is, and God knows this could be the sort of the motto of this year of elections, a lot of discontent with the status quo. That's very clear. And a sort of strong sense of someone must do something. But the challenge, I think, is that when we look across different kinds of institutions, a lot of the public is generally distrustful of most of the institutions that could act in this space. They are certainly distrustful or skeptical towards the platform companies, but they're also often quite distrusting of news media and often also of elected officials. So there is an appetite for change, but there is also a wariness of many of the actors that like to sort of present themselves as the agents of that change. And finally, I would say, I think the as soon as these things get more specific, we've shown this in the past in research we've done on the notion of quote unquote fake news and misinformation. And in this report, I think it really comes through very clearly in the bits that are about polarization, that I think sometimes there is a little bit of a risk here, sort of live by the sword, die by the sword, that journalists and politicians might think and present the world as one in which it's other actors that drive us apart, or in the past spread quote-unquote fake news and misinformation. But from the point of view of the public, while they definitely see platforms as part of the problems of our society's phase around misinformation and polarization, they very much see politicians and the news media as part of these problems as well. And in that sense, when one sort of shines the rhetorical light on these issues, the speakers may think, oh, here I'm really describing problems that are caused by other actors. The public will often interpret all this talk of polarization and misinformation through the lens of their perception that these problems have to do with platforms, yes, but also very much to do with news media and politicians.
Lots of hard questions for news industry persons and policymakers to think about. Vikas and Rasmus, thank you so much for joining in today.
Thank you so much, Mitali.
Thank you so much for having us.
Our guests today were Vikas Ajaz, a postdoctoral researcher at the Reuters Institute, and our former director, Rasmus Nielsen, who is now a professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Copenhagen. Make sure you follow our podcast channel on Spotify or Apple Podcasts so you don't miss the next episode. And of course, if you're tracking any news from the Institute, you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter by clicking the link on our Twitter bio, on our homepage, also on LinkedIn, and now on Blue Sky. Thanks very much for listening to The Future of Journalism. I'm Tani Mukherjee, and we'll be back very soon.